Hello, everyone. I am here today with Gabrielle San Nicola, all the way live from New York City. She is representing Disco Networks. I'm Mayor Bianchi, founder of Bemeyer. This is the e-commerce hotline by Bemeyer. Now, the e-commerce hotline is an actual hotline, which is meant to help you with your emergency e-commerce situations. But then on top of that, it is also a podcast brought to you by Bemeyer. And the number is there on the screen. So today, as I said, I'm joined by Gabrielle San Nicola. And so Gabrielle, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you got here and what you do for a living currently?
Hey, everybody. Mayor, thank you so much for having me on today. I'm excited to be here. You are one of my first friends, my first ever connections I made in my first partnership role. So thrilled to be here on this International Women's Day. So I'm Gab. I am now heading up our agency partnerships over at Disco. Disco is a post-purchase ad network for Shopify brands, but we'll get into what that means and what that looks like a little later.
Yes. And I was going to say that it was great to meet you on your first day at the previous company, and you are a refreshing person in the e-commerce world. You're so warm and genuine and awesome to work with, and you're definitely one of my favorite folks in the e-commerce world. And here's the shameless plug. Speaking of refreshing, I'm about to pop a non-alcoholic drink sip because it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. And while that would be appropriate to have a lunch beer at the old tavern, I'm in the studio and I'm popping a non-alcoholic drink sip. And that's also a Shopify brand. So anyway, Gabrielle, the hottest thing going on right now is this is a really big month for e-commerce events. I'm sure you have a busy docket as the senior agency partnerships manager at Disco Networks. And, you know, so tell me a little bit about what this time of year means, because I think for those of them of us watching, A, not everyone's going to go to Las Vegas. Not everyone's been to Palm Springs or going to all these various trade shows, which look like a lot of fun, but are also a lot of work and strenuous travel. So tell me a little bit what your plans for this month are on the e-commerce front.
Yeah, you know, e-com is such a wild time, right? We come off of holiday time to a bit of a January slump, and then right in the middle of January is NRF, and it's always the coldest week, and a bunch of the e-com world kind of congregates in New York City and commiserates in the cold weather at happy hours and different events surrounding the conference. And then we build into eTail, which is a lovely conference out in Palm Desert, which attracts some of the best e-com D2C brands and tech companies and agencies in the space. And then shortly after comes Shop Talk, which is coming up in about a week and a half in Las Vegas. So Disco is hosting a wellness lounge. We've got an IV lounge, masseuses, some client products that'll be there. We'll be out by the pool. So anybody who does go to Las Vegas for Shop Talk, definitely come and stop by the pool on Monday for an IV drip.
What date is Monday? Is that March 18th?
That is Monday, March 18th.
Shout outs to March 18th. That's my birthday. Holla at your boy.
Wow. All right. Well, then we will have to, we'll do a toast to celebrate.
Yeah, just have an extra IV and alcoholic beverage for me there.
There you go. Absolutely. And then right after Shop Talk comes an event that's pretty near and dear to my heart. I'm hosting an event called She Innovates with
Shout
Nicole
to everyone who's participating in that conference, and tell us about that. Sorry.
No, that's okay. We've got some really incredible people who are putting this together. Not to speak so highly of myself, but we also have Jess Cervellione, who is a superstar in her own right.
Customer experience legend.
CX legend who grew Feastables and is now like fractionally CMOing for a bunch of really incredible, fast-growing D2C brands.
Cheers.
Cheers to that. And Dylan Duchesne of Yapo and Nicole Harvey of Empower. We are putting on this event for women by women at the Shopify space. It'll be a full day of workshops and conversations. We have a career coach who's going to be speaking. We've got a financial advisor who's going to be joining. We have a DJ who will be there for happy hour. And it's really just a great day to get
And that's
everybody
an
together
all-day
again.
event. Like that's from like 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and beyond.
It is from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. and beyond.
So that's at the Shopify space on Green Street. And definitely shout outs to Dylan Duchesne. I think I've loosely worked with Dylan since like three companies ago, and she's a force in the ecosystem in her own right. And I just love to see stuff like this. Number one, it's great because it's a concentration of good things in one place. And just speaking strictly about what the Shopify space in New York City represents and what this type of event represents is I advise you, if you see this live, if you're watching this as a video before
Eleven.
March 27th, if you're watching this before March 27th, I highly advise you to check it out if you're a woman in e-commerce or getting into e-commerce in New York City, because whether you are focused on a career in tech and that side of it, whether you are a app maker or a theme maker or making products to support the ecosystem and you're that type of entrepreneur, or you're a brand owner, store owner, this is something really valuable to you. And I know firsthand, obviously not from the perspective of a woman or from this conference, that how much empowerment you can get and how many you don't know what you're going to get, but you're guaranteed to get something that's going to inspire you. So highly advise everyone to attend that and hit up Gabrielle, my friend Gab here. I'm trying to call you Gabrielle because it's such a powerful name. And so so you gotta hit up Gabrielle about it. There's tickets on LinkedIn, there's information out there. Is it a free event?
It is free.
Okay, see, that's amazing content to the masses. And are there sponsors or certain companies helping produce this event so that you can make it free for all?
We have a bunch of really great sponsors who have supported this event. So we have Chelsea and Rachel and Capital One and Disco and Yotpo and Recharge
Amazing.
and like a bunch of really, really great companies, really great agencies, and good people. I think it's going to be a great event.
Well, I hope to see all the recap videos because I won't be there. So, but it sounds exciting. So then, part of the things I want to cover today is the fact is that you are one of the most humble, accomplished folks in this ecosystem. You've actually been a founder. You have an extensive background in tech and entrepreneurship, and you have some more stories to tell. And so I wanted you to share with us and the audience a little bit about how you ended up in partnerships, in e-commerce, and what your journey has been from, your professional arc, because I think the story is only growing and we're very much in the in a an exciting chapter. But I think it's important for people to recognize, hey, everyone has a story of how they got here, and what goes into that shapes how you view and how you do such an excellent job working with your partners, because you bring that like perspective.
I appreciate it and I agree. I think I have gotten to where I am because I have been open to new experiences and new adventures that I wouldn't have initially considered.
Okay.
So I guess to start out, I grew up in New Jersey and I went to NYU for college. When I was applying to college, I thought I would go to medical school and I would get my MD in psychiatry and open up a rehab for addicts under 18.
Wow.
And then I got into NYU on a scholarship for a new degree granting program called Global Liberal Studies. So I decided that that was what I was going to do. So I came to New York and I got into this program that really encouraged people to exist out in the world that we live in. So
Meaning,
I
don't just stay cooped up in your Washington Square campus, like actually integrate yourself in the city because you're in New York University as a native Brooklynite who wanted to go to NYU as a wee lad and didn't, but I went to City College, which is a fire, oldest institution. Great, cool. You know, 1847, shout out City College. But you're saying it, the program asked you to get to be a three-dimensional person and whatever that means to you, and they gave you a lot of guidance on that. Tell me more.
Yeah, exactly. So we really only had class 2 days a week, and so that was great. And we had a lot of time to structure in other things that we had interest in. So
like internships, volunteering, that kind of stuff.
Internships, volunteering, entrepreneurial efforts. So I was interning and working as a hobby. When I was in school, I had anywhere from like 2 to 6 roles or internships or part-time things going on and moving around. It's incredible to grow up in the city, as you know, because everything is at your fingertips. So when I was in college, I helped a development company open a kosher fried chicken restaurant in East Harlem.
That's amazing.
Which was really cool. I worked for a PR agency that worked with Nick Jonas's album release party. That was back when they were popular.
Marrying international, you know, supermodels.
Yes. Yeah. Back when he was just the Jonas brother, he was breaking out on his own. So I had an opportunity to just kind of continue to hone my resume. And when I was a sophomore, I came across a posting on AngelList, looking for
as a freshman. Holy cow. All right, keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I started early. So I found this role and it seemed interesting. It was with a live streaming platform. And I started working there kind of as an intern. And then I rose to the ranks of, I headed up the marketing department. I was the director of operations. I led the engineering team for a little bit.
So basically what you're saying is you're like, oh man, Gabrielle is great at what she does. We need her. And you kind of just like the greatness just became apparent, and they had to put you in a high functioning role. So that says a lot. Keep going.
Yeah, I grew pretty quickly. I mean, I'm competitive. I grew up in a competitive family. I worked hard.
You played sports and you did like some very competitive sports.
Yeah, I was a competitive cheerleader for years. And I grew up with a really strong sense of competition and wanting to be the best. So that was just going to continue in my professional experience.
I love that. Keep going. And I'm going to get to what lessons we draw from this in a minute. So continue through, because this is just the sophomore year of college. So now you're an operator and a team leader in many sectors at a live streaming company. And so where did that go from there?
So the company did pretty well. We went from 10,000 to 22 million monthly active users in about 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
year it was this? Bad.
2016, 15.
Wow. So this was like when Twitch was popping off a little and like before Amazon, you know, it was like in the heyday of the early days of streaming, like big, you know, I don't know the exact year, but you know what I'm saying? It was when there was a streaming battle going on and it was new and hot. So that's awesome.
It was new and hot. I know Emmett relatively well. Twitch was
Twitch
a company.
On a first name basis with the Twitch guy.
Yeah, naturally. That was a really, really cool area to be in. Streaming was really popular. YouTubers were starting to amass empires.
Yep.
And, you know, creators were starting to really find a foundation in building community. So StreamUp, my company, was exactly that, right? We were a live streaming platform before Facebook Live, before YouTube Connect. We allowed users to restream content as if it was live. So We could take the recording of this interview right now and put it up on StreamUp through an encoder, and then you and I can answer questions in the chat as we are replaying the conversation. It was cool. It was really
Yeah,
fun.
so it's stream on stream and it's added value. It's the whole concept of the channels, and I think that's awesome. Like, and then so that was, and then did you stay there for a couple of years? Like, once you hit a gold mine, did it, you know, what happened from there? Because obviously you're still a student, and now you're also like a working professional with real problems. So how did that progress into your junior year and senior year? Like, where did it all go? Because did you put down other endeavors to focus on that at the time?
So my program required us to go abroad for an entire year for our junior year,
That's sick.
which is a really cool opportunity. I went to NYU Florence, which was like the campus was donated by a very wealthy person who left his vineyard and 50 acres all to NYU,
So
and he didn't even
it
know.
was a campus that was a vineyard in the rolling foothills of Florence, Italy. Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty magnificent. We had olive oil making as a class, and
The fine art of olive oil making.
it was a pretty incredible place to be. But as I was at my first week of class at NYU Florence, I was like, this is incredible, but this is not going to get me where I want to be.
Well, mentally, you were probably past that point. You know, you're
I
like,
was definitely past the finding myself point. I was fairly confident in where I wanted to go.
don't
So I
tell me
came
you
back.
packed your bags.
Oh, I packed my bags. I came right back to New York,
Okay,
and
at least you went to New York. Good.
2 months later, I hosted StreamCon at the Javits Center with
Like you were the
StreamUp.
keynote or like thousands
Yep.
of people, you're there like, welcome to StreamCon, like an episode of Silicon Valley. That's cool. All right,
Exactly,
keep going.
exactly. There were thousands of people, a ton of our creators came out. We worked with Andy Milonakis and Bria and Christy and a bunch of creators
Was
who
Mr.
were
Beast in the
well
mix back then? Because he
known.
wasn't on your platform. He was a YouTuber, so maybe it was like a.
He was a YouTuber. Yeah, we didn't really overlap yet, but I made a lot of effort into or put a lot of effort into StreamUp, and I did also, I mean, I stayed at NYU for my sophomore, junior, and senior
So
year.
you're saying they let you get out of that study abroad requirement?
I ended up being exempt from it because I had this company and I had this
Yeah, you're like,
opportunity.
you guys told me to find, you told me to get involved, and now I'm a boss. So what do you want me to do with this? You want me to sacrifice that to go live in Italy, even though that's great? No, yeah. Okay. I'm glad you
Exactly.
understood.
Exactly. Yeah,
Shout out
they
to whoever that
understood.
was.
So I packed my bag, moved back to the West Village, and I came back to kind of crush what I was doing there.
Okay.
At the time, I started writing a thesis as well. So I wrote my senior thesis on online dating and how technology has disrupted the flow of modern romantic relationships.
That is amazing. Cause I, yeah, no, that's cool. I have some comments about that. Keep going.
And at that time, we were also going through Y Combinator,
Wow.
which was an exciting time. But the kicker with Y Combinator was the day after demo day, Facebook announced Facebook Live, YouTube announced YouTube Connect, and a lot of the interest that we had in from the investors kind of went away.
Would you say it evaporated?
I would say it
That's a more
evaporated.
devastating word. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, that all dried up
So
real
like
quick.
that timing, if it was like 3 months earlier or something, could have got some commitments. But then anyway, that's great for the story arc, but terrible. I'm sorry that happened. Keep going.
No, it's a shoulda, woulda, coulda. Everybody's got their own experience, and hindsight is 20/20, but we ended up selling the technology to a company out in Taipei, and I believe they are using it for a dating app, which is really fun.
So you're saying the stream up technology might be used right now for live stream dating, like speed dating, or hey, have a 5-minute conversation with a stranger and see if you mesh, and then continue the conversation on our other tech. So technically, your thesis, you know, came true, and it all came full circle. So that, I just wanted to comment, because I definitely didn't want to interrupt the flow too much, was that that's a really exciting story, because that's only till graduating college, right? And I want to dissect really quick for everyone who's listening that there's key takeaways, right? Not everyone's going to get the same opportunities that Gabrielle got in those formative years, but there's some lessons learned there, which I think are, you know, hunger to be the best, wanting to compete, going into a situation and giving your absolute best, showing up, not being afraid to put yourself out there. Because think about it, you're I don't want to say you're a rare exception, but the point is that's a great example of when you are given a situation like that, you rose to the occasion instead of finding, you know, hiding in some corner or finding one thing. You're like, nope, I'm going to keep doing things. And I think programs like that are really interesting, and more people should try to find things like that, because, you know, New York is one of those places where if you say you were interested in tech or you were interested in business development and things like that, but say someone was into the arts, say someone was into other aspects of life, they would have found it too in New York. And that's why New York is such a great place to have this happen. And so I just think that's really cool that you kept it open-minded, because that is such a strong foundation. So where did it go from there? Like, that was just through senior year of college, right? And so Stream Up kind of ended in that time frame, like while you were graduating the program, or?
Stream Up was officially not ours anymore by July, right after I graduated. So a couple weeks after.
So it was like a total catharsis. Like, you, a lot of chapters closed at the same time.
A lot of chapters closed at the same time. So after that, I went to Pakistan and India and Abu Dhabi for a while.
For how long? That's amazing. Once again, very remarkable.
I was there for 3 months ish. A bunch of my friends from college were from that area, so I went to go and travel around and visit them and meet their families and explore parts unknown, which was incredible.
So you kind of got to go abroad. You took care of that going abroad part a little later, basically.
Yeah, you know, I don't have any regrets not going abroad or going abroad for college.
How could
you? Yeah, you know, I think there's a really interesting culture around study abroad where there's this expectation that it's going to be completely life-changing and always incredible. But for anybody who's traveled to Europe or elsewhere, I mean, it's tough to be away from where you're from, where your family is, and to immerse yourself into a new place. And
especially
I don't
like everyone you're living with. Like, imagine you just say, oh, I got to stay in this place for another year. Like, what is this going to be like? Get me out of here.
Yeah. 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 And study abroad culture is one where, you know, you need to have a lot of money to be able to travel every weekend out of the city that you're living in.
Think about that. Yeah, because you can't just go and get a job or a work permit, or, you know, it kind of is like, it puts entitlement in a glass case almost, because you're like, at least if you're in New York City and you have, you know, you can find a job if that's what you need to survive, you know, and like, not every kid, like I said, every experience is unique, but I would say that's a key point, because yeah, when I was in college, I was in a program that was like, oh, not working is a requirement to maintain this scholarship. And that was at odds with, you know, what my life needs were. And so it made it feel a little conflicting because there was like a GPA to maintain. And so I would say it was interesting because it was the best that CUNY had to offer, and it was a remarkable program. But then it also was like discouraging in another way, because I didn't have some like independent source of wealth to, I mean, obviously, like, once again, I feel like I was luckier than a lot of people or different, didn't have to really get a job, but I'm saying, like, it was more than you limit yourself. So, you know, once again, that's admirable because you wanted to be in control of your own destiny. And also, not to ramble on about that, but, like, you were okay with saying, no, I'm not going to stay here, even though that was probably, like, a scary decision and you didn't know what was going to happen, but you knew what was right for you. And I think that's another lesson. is that often people feel like they can't change things, or you feel like if you change things, it's the end of the world. And I think that's a lesson we can draw from your story too, is like not being afraid to change direction and just trusting your own compass and listening to that voice is something that a lot of people don't do.
Yeah. I mean, you deserve to give yourself grace to know what's best for yourself and to allow yourself to change your mind. And that's something that I have kept in mind, right? Like it's my life, it's my story. I don't need to have it work for somebody else or for a minor character or what have you. Like I need to be happy with it. And if I'm not happy with it and I can't, and I don't do anything to change it, then that's my fault, I think.
Yes. No, yeah, exactly. Accountability is such a big part of it. But then realizing you have both the agency on both sides is what's important. So then going from there, how did you end up then in e-commerce, or what happened after? So, you know, you went to Asia, you went to the Middle East, you had an interesting time exploring other cultures, which I think are so radically different than our life in the United States. Even though we work with a lot of folks from that part of the world, nothing like seeing it firsthand and being in like a more family setting and being treated like that, that really makes you appreciate everything. And so what happened after that? Like, and the goal where I'm going with this is I want to get to where we are today, and then we can talk more about the right now and the product.
Yeah, absolutely. So I came back to New York after this trip, and I realized that I didn't have any college friends left in New York City. I didn't really know anybody anymore. So I figured that I could meet cool people who worked in marketing, right? I didn't really know what exactly that meant, but young and interesting people work at marketing agencies. I figured, based on, you know, TV and movies and my prior experience in the world. So I found a role with an agency called Selfmade, based in Little Italy. And I started working there as a salesperson. I thought I would like transfer maybe and work on like the brand management side, but once I got into the sales role, I'm pretty competitive and I was pretty good at what I was doing. So
you're ringing the bell a lot. Yeah.
I was ringing the bell a lot. I was our highest earner. I had record-breaking months. I got to build out a team of SDRs under me to, you know, teach them what to do and how to do it in order to be successful in this role. And it was a really, really great place to meet a lot of people who I'm still close with today.
Awesome.
But to kind of set that e-commerce stage for me.
Well, that was like how you broke more into New York tech in that side of things. And then from Selfmade, where did you end up?
So from Selfmade, I went to Hawk Media, and then
Hawk Media.
Yep, Hawk Media, based out in LA. And then after Hawk, I went to the Lunar Solar Group, an agency based out in New York City. And then after Lunar Solar, I went to Okendo, which is an e-com company, which is where we met, right when I first started. And then about 6 months ago, I hopped over from Okendo, and now I'm at Disco.
Well, I would just say, I think that's another important lesson, is you've taken different facets of it and also kept striving to learn different aspects of the business so that you can hone in where you wanted to go. And also, I would say working at an agency probably gives you the perspectives on brand challenges from another side, versus when you're working at a tech company, it's giving you that other perspective, and now you kind of have that full, you know, 360 on it. Like, you know, my personal experience is I worked in retail, then in e-commerce, came from like a developer perspective or an IT perspective, learned more business perspective, understood the nexus of both, and I was like, okay, I want to help people and build a company that works on that. But what I was missing is I never worked for an agency, so I didn't have that agency culture. And I think in what I'm doing now, I would say that it's anti-pattern in the sense that, like, I've probably made a lot of business mistakes with my company because I didn't have that agency background. But then from a customer-centric perspective, it's like, oh, I've only thought from perspectives of brands and customers because that's who I was representing or what I was working for. I was never on the other side of that table. So it's been an interesting journey learning it firsthand in a choose your own adventure fashion. And then, so Okendo is where you and I met. Like you said, on like the first day, you started on the partnerships team. We're at the Signified partner summit at the on the tail end of that, which I thought was a really exciting event because it brought a bunch of different kind of partners together. And since Okendo was focused on reviews and retention and UGC, and then later on expanding into other technologies, now that you are at Disco Network, tell us a little more about Disco Network, since I know Disco Network is some form of collaborative commerce, which is a term coined by Carl, but then Disco is cool. Like, I first heard of it because it actually helps place cross-selling your products but on other brands and inside of their experience. So it creates a different sales surface. And so one of the things I want to make sure to cover in this episode is to learn, to enlighten our audience more about the Disco Network, how it it's for Shopify only, or is it for all platforms?
So right now we are Shopify exclusive.
But it's like plug and play on Shopify. Like, you can install it and be up and running quickly. So
plug and play. Onboarding takes about 45 minutes tops.
Okay.
And for brands that are $20 million and above, you can expect to see Disco driving anywhere from 2-4% of your monthly incremental GMV. So powerful. It ends up being pretty meaningful. So
we call that mortgage money around here, meaning like you add some little incremental revenue that helps pay some serious bills and you don't have to do that much to get it because you're lending your brand's power, right? The gravitas of your company, the weight of your company to another company or to a series of companies, and that just brings you in traffic and sales.
Exactly. Yeah. So we allow our brands to sell their products on other brands' post-purchase pages. So, it is a collaborative program in the sense that in order for your products to be sold on other companies' post-purchase page, you need to be selling other brands on yours. But post-purchase page, firstly, is normally kind of undervalued, right? Somebody's already made that purchase. You've converted your customer. So having the Disco widget in your post-purchase experience doesn't affect your conversion rate in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But it does allow for your customers to find other brands that are relevant to them, right? So we have mapped out about 90 million user profiles in the US, right? So that's It's about a third of the entire country. We have information on where they've gone before and after they've shopped at Sol de Janeiro. So we basically have created this algorithm that will serve very relevant product recommendations to a customer at that point of sale.
Meaning, so, like, it knows what they bought, or yeah, keep going, but it basically will show you things that aren't out of left field, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So if I'm checking out from Sol de Janeiro, the recommendations that I may see could be from Thousand Fell sneakers because those are my favorite shoes and I buy them all the time. And Laura Geller Beauty because I have a tendency to overspend on skincare. And then maybe Caraway. Right. But your post-purchase recommendations may include True Classic Tees or Nanit Babies. There you go. Or P's and Q's.
Yeah.
So, the idea is that all the recommendations that are shown to those customers are completely custom and like directed at that specific person with the intent that you know, somebody will convert and make a purchase.
That relevancy will result in a higher click-through on the ad unit.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's this brand halo effect, like you mentioned, that, you know, after you've checked out from Sol de Janeiro and you see a Dagny Dover bag in their post-purchase experience, that gives Dagny Dover a bit of a vote of confidence. You're like, oh, okay, that's a great brand. Exactly. And then that also reinforces your confidence in that first brand in Sol de Janeiro because...
Oh, if you're associated with this brand, it must be, my purchase was very justified almost.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Also, like, I don't know about you, but I've been on some shopping frenzies before. Like once the shopping faucet is open and you're in a shopping mood, either you're doing some retail therapy or, you know, it's just like you're in that state of mind, like the dopamine of buying new things. I know it sounds pathetic, but I'm saying like sometimes you just are open to buying some things, right? And then sometimes you pull back. I would say... It also comes with that too, right? Like you didn't expect to see it. So you're like, oh, what's this? You click, all of a sudden you're on this other shopping experience as well. And I think that will, you know, that can enhance your whole perception of that initial experience too.
Yeah, you know, I think malls and stores, department stores, even grocery stores, right? They are not as popular as they once were. So in the e-commerce experience, Disco very much is just like that end cap after you've made your purchase of all of the candy and the cool things that you can get. It's a really great virtual mall. After I've checked out from Caraway, if I could see some other products that people like me have purchased, like, yeah, absolutely. What are other people buying? Like, I want to see this toaster or this nail polish or those pants from Faherty. So I think there is no higher intent placement than at the point of sale when somebody has already taken out their credit card and swiped and is on that high.
And also, like, just like you're saying about that, Shopify, your payment data is already stored there. It's the same checkout. So it's very easy to go make another impulse purchase. Like when I see, like now when I shop on Shopify stores and you see that, you're like, it's so much easier to make a purchasing decision because it's already saved. Or, you know, yeah. You can just ring in Apple Pay. But the point is when it already knows who you are, it just makes it that much even more closer. And then I was going to ask, is there a Disco like browsing scape for people to see like all the brands on Disco, or like, you know, like you said, a mall, like is there some place that a shopper could go and shop all the Disco brands, or is that not necessarily like the intent or a current focus?
So yes, there is. On our website, it's disconetwork.com. You can find the collective, which shows, I believe it's our top 100 brands. Okay. We also have a Slack channel that is open for brands and marketers, which again, everybody is welcome to join, but that Slack channel is always really active with brands who are looking to collaborate with others and looking for service help, looking for giveaways and things like that. So it's another really great way to interact with the other brands there.
Well, it sounds like as a Shopify and e-commerce agency altogether, we need to be up in there because that sounds really cool. I didn't know about that. And I just saw that there's like a brand page, and yeah, this seems like the added value that you would have when you're amalgamating the best and brightest of everything. So that's really exactly cool.
And I would say on top of that, so in our performance dashboards, you can obviously see your success across the network and what your return on spend is, but you're also able to see what brands have the most overlap with you. So, you know, you're able to see the exact dollar value of how much revenue this brand has driven to you based on them showing your post-purchase recommendation. Oh,
that also opens up the door to potential collaborations and partnerships. Like, hey, we seem to pair really well with this brand. How can we, you know, like that, have there been any like successful stories like that where they kind of matched up or something like that?
Absolutely. DS and Durga and Avarani did a holy collaboration. Faherty and Andy Swimwear did a collab that was released to a ton of success because it was the collaboration that their customers never knew they needed.
That's awesome.
It's really, really interesting to have a data-driven angle to evaluate your brand partnerships. And even your targeting, right? Like back in the agency days, I worked with Scotch Porter and we were running their ads and we were targeting, you know, men in the ages of 25 to 45 in certain areas. And we noticed that those ads weren't performing super well to that demographic. They were performing very well to a female demographic in that same age range. So our hypothesis was maybe it's the mothers and the girlfriends and the wives and the sisters who are buying those products for, yeah, exactly. So with Disco, I mean, one thing that I've seen is that there's a baby brand called Caden Lane who, one of their highest sources of referral traffic is Liquid IV.
Really?
Really. And, you know, there are a ton of inferences you can use, right? Maybe it's nursing moms need more electrolytes or parents need to get over their hangovers much quicker when they have little ones in the house.
Yeah,
or
feel guilty, like, oh, I can't believe I, you know, but you're not buying the Liquid IV at the point of hangover. I feel like you're buying the Liquid IV to have electrolytes in your home for your family's needs or to have on the go. So that's maybe it's like a reminder.
Well, you know, it's very interesting to see that there is a very big overlap in their customers. So maybe in the next collaboration that Caraway does, they should include Liquid IV because obviously a ton of Liquid IV customers then eventually come and convert on Caraway. So it's also about like servicing your customers more, like give them what they want.
Yeah. And I think when you pair that with something like a Caro, you've got all ends of it covered, right? Cause Caro is like collaborative commerce that allows a brand to sell another brand's products on the website as like a drop, you know, like a drop ship or a marketplace vibe. So imagine you have end to end, you know, like you can now explore those partnerships deeper because of Disco and because it helps you identify that. So that's really cool. Yeah. Cause I'd heard of it because of a fashion brand we work with called Anatomy had it on their checkout. And I would say that it was a cool idea. At the time I was maybe a little uninformed, but like I've come to see that it's actually, like you said, it's about driving incremental revenue, which is what every brand needs. So it's kind of like if it's done right, because I think if you just throw the widget in the wrong place on your post-purchase page, it can be a little jarring. But if you actually say, hey, here's your, you know, you can find your tracking info here. This is like, hey, what we want you to know as our customer, but we think you should check out these great products and these great brands, or you may also like it. Like if it's tastefully oriented into the page, it's great. And like you said, the post-purchase success page is like a very underutilized surface in selling and in customer experience, because it's like it's got it. You want someone to continue the journey or to leave with some kind of a good feeling.
So then
I was gonna say, what are you most excited about aside from that? I would say I'm coming back to the conferences. What are some of the other trends you're seeing in e-commerce more globally? Like what are you really excited about in 2024? Because I would say it's a very interesting time to be a brand or to be in e-commerce.
Yeah. The world has not stopped becoming interesting over the past couple of years and nothing has stayed static. And what worked last year may not work this year. I think there have been a lot of shifts in privacy changes and like email deliverability rules and app tracking and Meta outages. LinkedIn has even been out and down over the past couple of days, at least for me, which
2 days ago. Yeah.
Strange.
We're going to break LinkedIn right now with this stream. No,
Absolutely, it's possible. But with all of these shifts, I think brands are looking to find ways to diversify out of the industry behemoths that are taking very high budgets and not providing not only return but information. We as marketers are losing information and cookies and valuable yes. pieces of data that have helped us to do our jobs. And I think what will be coming in e-com in this year and next year, and what I'm excited for is, you know, having these solutions that come up that give you really clear understandings of who your customers are, where they're going, how much they're spending, and what that can do for you. So I'm interested to see the personalization tactics that come out with different tech companies. Interested in seeing, you know, what collaborative commerce means for other brands. And also really interested to take a look at what the holiday planning timeline is this year. Yes. I feel like last year it was a lot of the holiday planning that I was privy to was going on very much in early summer. So by the time September-ish came, a lot of brands were close to code freezes or confident in their full holiday schedule and planning. Just interested to see what that timeline also looks like.
Yeah, and also it's an election year, which I think is interesting as well, because you're going to have a lot of different sentiments occurring right around the time of holiday shopping. And obviously it's a major election year every 4 years, but you know, I would say 2020 was a wild year. It was a very unique year in our history, 2016. So, you know, like there's been all these different scandals and data privacy breaches and things like that. So I would just say it's always fun to, when you start to prepare for holiday, because you do see, like, even if things are frozen, somebody still might come up with something towards the end of it, or something new might come along, or a trend, and then all the brands want to jump on it. So I would say that is a time of year that is definitely exciting. And I'm trying to think as well if there was any other takeaways we can give people today, because we're nearing the end of our live stream time. I know you may have other meetings and things to attend to on this busy International Women's Day. And so I just wanted to say that, you know, from my perspective, that just like how we talked about people not being afraid to adapt or make changes, brands need to pivot. Brands need to try new things, because like you said so well, is what worked yesterday may not work today. And I think fortunately we're in a very democratized era of e-commerce, where you have tools like Disco or like Okendo or like these other platforms that really you can get up and running relatively quickly. You can try new things. You don't have to just stay stuck with one provider. And I think choice is really healthy for competition. I always say that, because then that means more freedom for brands or parties to do what they have to do. So, so much more I could get into. But it's been a long day already, and it's time for some lunch. I wanted to take a serious moment for a minute and just say what the e-commerce hotline stands for. It was an idea that's been going around for a while, and I finally came to a consensus that the goal of the e-commerce hotline is when a brand or a store owner finds, or someone that works there finds themselves in a situation where you don't know where to turn, or you're stuck in a bad situation, or you've had some kind of thing come up, like with a vendor or with a circumstance, and you're kind of out of ideas, like more serious hotlines, such as, you know, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, Domestic Violence Hotline, not making light of that, but more just in the sense of, like, it has utility as a place where you can turn. And obviously you're going to be met with a lot of experience or people that want to help. And so I feel really good about that. So I wanted to ask you, what, has there been a circumstance that you've seen with the brands you've worked with, or in general, where you're like, oh, I wish there was a you know, like an e-com emergency, even if not if you wished you had a place to turn because you have an extensive network, but has there been situations where you're like, that has come up, like where there's been a need?
Yeah, I think I think there's always a bit of a disconnect from marketers to dev teams, either internally or externally, right? So sometimes the retention team is talking to Okendo, or the performance media team is talking to Disco, and they're really excited about the tool. But they feel like it is necessary for a dev to set up. And Okendo definitely has, you know, some intensive processes that you need to set up properly. You need to set up your Klaviyo flows, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that is something that comes up all the time. Like, there are not always easy solutions, implementation options. But having the e-commerce hotline and a real direct note to you, especially, to reach out and say, hey, we need to spin up an Okendo program for a new to launch brand, reaching out to you and the e-com hotline, well, I think is exactly the right thing.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. And I would just say that we can call that a case of need where, let me put myself in a brand owner's shoes. I don't have time. There's new programs I'm going to get off the ground. Let's just say I don't have a big staff. I have one person helping me. They're overwhelmed with other day-to-day responsibilities. Sometimes you don't know. You could be overwhelming. And so maybe sometimes you just need someone to talk you through, hey, here is a methodical approach by which you can conquer these items on your checklist and get it live. So I would say, taking it back to like the point of being in the perspective of a brand person, is maybe sometimes you're just overwhelmed with information and you need help navigating the waters. And then sometimes, depending on how you respond to that scenario, can make or break your happiness with those choices you made. And then, cool. Last note before we wrap up here, I wanted to ask, because also on the e-commerce hotline, I'm passionate about the cause of raising awareness for heart disease in e-commerce. You know, I have genetic heart disease, and, you know, and through screening, more people can discover that and asking questions about their family history and talking to their doctor. So I wanted to ask if there's any causes that are near and dear or personal to you that you would like to share with the audience to help raise awareness for.
Yeah, I think mental health is really, really important to always take note of. And I think it's important that everyone knows at all points in time that you are not alone. You know, bad days, bad weeks, they happen, they come. If you need support, you have friends and connections and mentors and phone contacts who would be more than happy to listen to whatever you need to say, or just be able to sit with you. So just a friendly reminder that you're not alone.
Yeah. And no, I could not have said that better. And that's actually the second time that that has come up today. On the previous guest that I was talking to, said the same thing. And I think that's what's so important, is because when we're going through hard times, or we feel like we don't have anyone to turn to, that's an exactly when we need to turn to anyone in our life, because most people are compassionate. Everyone cares. People will give you the time. Like, you are important. And sometimes we don't want to, you know, we don't think that we have the power to, you know, oh, I'm going to be a burden. No, it's never a burden. Always pick up that phone. Always tell someone you need help. And that's such a good message to carry forward. You know, there's so much more we could talk about. I'd love to have you on like a special panel edition, or find out about the summit that's at the end of the month. Please tell the guests one last time about the name, March 27th. You can catch Gabrielle there. Let's one more time.
She Innovates.
The She Innovates Summit, brought to you by Empower Her, right?
Empower and Midcoast.
And Midcoast. Okay. So just want to say shout outs to that. We will all see you there, and I'm excited to see what comes. Thank you for being a guest today on the e-commerce hotline live. E-commerce hotline live edition. Gab, why don't you say goodbye to the folks, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Mayor. It was a pleasure. And thank you all for listening. I hope it was enjoyable.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. I'm Mayor Bianchi. Thanks for watching the e-commerce hotline live, and have a nice afternoon.
If you need help with e-commerce but don't have time, call the e-commerce hotline. If you need help to make your store shine, call the e-commerce hotline. Your store needs improving, don't deny. Gotta call e-commerce hotline. Call 888-499-3266. Your store will be fine. 888-499-3266. Make your store shine. E-commerce hotline. E-commerce hotline.